When Novella Carpenter moved to the Bay Area with her boyfriend, she figured she'd hit the jackpot when she found an apartment that was not only affordable, it also had a big vacant lot next door. She imagined turning that lot into a garden, with lettuce and tomatoes and fruit trees and a beehive and a rabbit hutch and, well, what she imagined was actually more of a farm than a garden. The only problem was the apartment and that tempting vacant lot were in Oakland, known at the time as the murder capital of America.
I kind of didn't know exactly what I was getting into when I moved into the neighborhood. I mean, yeah, it's true. We did hear gunshots. And it was definitely one of those things where I was like, wow, I'm not going to walk around at night in this neighborhood. But the farming was so appealing to me, I wanted to stay.
It wasn't even, in fact, a lot that belonged to you. It belonged to somebody else entirely. But you saw it from the very beginning as not just a garden, but a farm.
Yeah, I had raised bees and chickens in Seattle. And so when I moved to California, I was sort of had this these ideas that had been brewing sort of, you know, I blame Michael Pollan, but, you know, these ideas about raising my own turkey for Thanksgiving. And I started to raise rabbits and then I started to raise pigs. So and now I have goats. So it kind of spiraled, but there had to be this open space that allowed that to happen.
As you talk, I can hear the enthusiasm that you have for all of this, and it begins to grow, the idea of it, just as you talk. On the other hand, I have to say, when I think about the inner city, I think of weeds growing out of asphalt.
Yeah, the empty lot had weeds that were about waist high, and people had used it kind of as a dumping ground. So as we started sifting through the dirt, cutting down the weeds, we would discover, you know, tin cans. And, you know, back in the day, people used to bury garbage. And so we would find, unearth all these strange artifacts, like a shag carpet. And so we cleaned it up. We also discovered that there was a giant concrete pad. The whole lot was covered mostly with a concrete pad. And later I found out it had been an apartment building and it had burned down.
Now, with a concrete pad, how do you go about farming? You didn't break it up.
Basically, we built raised beds about 2 feet deep and then just filled them with composted horse manure and then just planted directly into them. If I owned the property, I would probably remove the concrete. But, you know, having not owning it, not renting it, kind of squatting on it, I didn't want to do too much work.
Of course, we should add that you did actually meet the man who owned the land and you got at least tacit permission to
be there. Yes, tacit. I mean, he basically was like, garden is okay. You know, don't build any structures. I think he was worried I was going to build a home, which, you know, maybe I would have if I had never met him. But his goal was to, like many property owners in California, was to build condos. And he has since sold the property, and now it's owned by another woman whose dream is to build condos. So
I'm surprised, actually, at how well the neighbors responded to the addition of this garden.
What happened with the garden is, you know, I went around and tried to get people to help me at first. I was sort of like knocked on doors and, hey, I'm starting this garden and, you know, do you want to help me? And everyone was like, no, not really, you know, whatever. I buy my stuff at Safeway. Thanks, but no thanks. And I realized at that time that I was just going to have to do it myself. You know, it was just one of those things that a lot of people have really good ideas, but then you don't do it. So I had to kind of throw it down and actually do the work. And so, you know, my boyfriend and I and a couple of friends helped build the garden. And then as the garden, because it was an open space, you know, you could just walk in. There is a gate around it, but anybody is invited to come in. People started to come visit and hang out there because it was sort of a sanctuary of green in the middle of the city. And what happened was we started to notice that it opened up conversations. So there would be people from, you know, Somalia or El Salvador who would stop by and tell me about what they grow in their country. So it started this whole dialogue about a garden is a place to have a conversation about who you are. And for me, you know, I'm the spawn of Back to the Land hippies in Idaho. And so we would have these shared conversations, shared memories about the best way to grow tomatoes or, you know, what a pea tastes like or, you know, this is a great herb. And farming advice would be dispensed from sort of the old timers who had come from predominantly African-American communities in the South. Things like, here's how to grow collard greens. And so it became this whole place for a conversation to talk about our culture.
Well, I'm curious about that, in fact, because I can see as the menagerie began to grow that people's attitudes toward your garden might change. It is one thing to have tomato plants. It's quite another to have, what, 300-pound pigs?
Yeah. Well, the pigs were really almost a breaking point. It was a little too much for the place to handle. I think I had sort of miscalculated how big they would get. And the pigs would sometimes escape. We had them in the backyard because there was a really nice big fence back there that could hold them back. But sometimes it didn't work, and sometimes they'd break out. And the pigs sort of capering down 28th Street was hilarious on one side, but horrifying at the other because, you know, for me, I'd never raised pigs before. So I had no idea how to herd them back into their area. And they're very bullheaded, you know, they're very stubborn. They want to go find something to knock over and eat.
Suey doesn't pull them home. Huh?
That doesn't work. I couldn't believe it. Doesn't work. And so what would happen is we have a Buddhist monastery across the street from us, and they're from Vietnam as well. And so they would run out. And, you know, they had lived in the Vietnamese countryside where there were pigs. So they knew exactly, like, even noises to make to sort of get the pigs back into their area. So they were very good at pig wrangling. But the irony of that was that they were vegetarian. So then we would sort of have a conversation about, you know, that the pigs wanted to be free. And yet, there we were. So
how did you even feed 300-pound pigs? Now, they weren't 300 pounds when you began. In fact, they were
small. No, yeah.
The produce of the garden isn't enough to keep them happy, is it?
No, it's not. And that wasn't what we were thinking. Bill and I, my partner Bill, we would dumpster dive, actually. Our idea was that we lived in the city. You know, in some ways, people are like, why are you farming in the city? It doesn't make sense. Why don't you just go out to the country? And my thing was always that there is a tremendous waste stream in the city that we could tap, and that would be dumpsters. We had seen so much good food going to waste in these dumpsters, especially in really nice high-end organic restaurants. And so we thought, you know, they're going to be like real Bay Area pigs. They're going to eat free-range organic food. Now, remember, this is sort of like during the fattest times. This is like 2007. You know, we would routinely find an entire dumpster filled with organic peaches or, you know, that had just gone a little bit too ripe or, you know, wheels of brie. So these pigs were eating incredibly well.
Coming back to the neighborhood, this place that was clearly becoming home to you. It's a home that for some other people meant that they were homeless. There were people there whose business you wouldn't probably approve of if you were a judgmental kind of person. Did they take advantage of your garden?
No, it's funny. No one ever did. And the thing that was amazing to me is, and is still amazing to me, is that I had never lived in a place where there was really hungry people. I had never seen people who were actually literally hungry. And it wasn't just like a con to be able to, you know, buy some drugs. I mean, for me to open up the garden and just be like, you can pick mustard greens or whatever you need. If that's going to help you eat well and feed your family, then how could I not open that up for you? You know what I mean? Like, what kind of person would I be if I was like, oh, no, you can't have that food? I mean, that is crazy.
There's a story you tell fairly early in the book about it, looking out the window and seeing a man pulling carrots that weren't quite ready yet, but that were long enough to be identifiable as carrots. And you raced downstairs to chase him away and ended up feeling as though he had done you a favor.
Yeah, you know, that was the moment that I really realized that part of growing food, part of being calling yourself a farmer, is feeding other people besides your family and yourself. So to have this man come into the garden and pick carrots and have a memory when I went down to sort of say, hey, what's going on? He told me that the place reminded him of his grandmother. And his eyes welled up in tears. And I had this intense realization that a garden is not just about growing food. It's about these memories. It's about these tastes and these experiences. The smell of a freshly pulled carrot is actually really intense. You can smell that carrotiness. And the fact that he was stuffing him into his leather jacket pocket. And
It's fascinating, isn't it? You went there to do this, not to beautify the neighborhood, but to grow your own food, to add some nature to the city. But you did end up, in a way, beautifying your neighborhood by farming.
I did. Yeah, it's true. And it's funny because I'll be out in the garden and I'll hear people. I have like a little sign up that says Ghost Town Farm. And the other day, one of my neighbors walked by and I heard him say, Ghost Town Farm. And then he's like, the neighborhood's coming up. And I was just, that made me just crack up laughing.
Has this whole urban farming project changed the way you think about your neighborhood, about your home?
It does. I was surprised. I mean, people will stop me on the street, you know, my friend Al, will stop me in the street and be like, hey, what's growing in the garden? You know, it's sort of like I have to give the blow by blow. And, you know, it has made me feel like my identity in that neighborhood, my place, in this neighborhood, this unlikely neighborhood where I would fit in, has been to be the local farmer. And so it really makes me feel like I am home. I dearly love my neighborhood and I love my neighbors and I love feeding them and listening to them. And it's been so, so rewarding and in a way that I could have never expected.
If you'll forgive the metaphor, you feel more deeply rooted there.
I do. If only I wasn't just a squatter, if only I could actually afford to buy some land someday.
Novella Carpenter's best-selling memoir, Farm City, The Education of an Urban Farmer, is just out in paperback.